Okay, we're picking up with the Gemara on Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph. We're at the first line of Gemara of Asi. We're picking up our discussion discussing Kli Cheres. We're discussing earthen vessels and its ramifications. We're going to discuss more details and machlokes about things that we mentioned on yesterday's daf. We're starting with the words Amar of Asi. So Rav Asi said, Shonen, Rashi says, Shonen over here means that the people who taught Braisas, they taught us the following. Braisa, that the people used to memorize, remember, used to memorize all the different Braisas. The people used to tell them in front of the Amorim. These are referred to as people who teach the Braisas. And Rashi, if you look at the Kute Rashi, Rashi Nid, I think it is, says that when it says shown in this Lashon, it's actually Halacha L'Moshe Mishina. It's interesting over here, it doesn't mention that, but in Rashi Nid, he does mention that when it says the word shonen, it mentions it's Halacha L'Moshe Mishina. Either way, the Braisa taught us, Klei Cheres, when it comes to an earthenware vessel, Shiru Bekonis Mashke, that the shear, the smallest hole that's going to change its status halachically, is going to be the shear that it's going to be big enough to take in a liquid. And the Rashi points out, meaning that if it takes in the liquid, it's going to be unfit for the mechatas, right? As I mentioned before yesterday, that the mechatas was the water they sprinkled the Parah Aduma, so you need Dumayim Chayim El Keli, needs to be a Kli, so if it has this, even the smallest hole over here, this hole is enough to take in a liquid, that hole is going to be big enough to passel it, to say that it's invalid for uses of the Mechatas, of the waters of the Parah Aduma. Velo Amra Motzi Mashke, and they only said the shear of enough to liquid in, which is a smaller size, that shear was the El In Gishra Bevad, is only referred to a shard, meaning that a shard that loses its utensil status, even with the hole that's the smaller status. Again, we have these two shirim, we have of Kodes Mashke, and we have Motzi Mashke. Kodes Mashke is slightly larger than that of Motzi Mashke. Rav Asi is understanding that the Bryce would be telling us that the only shear that's relevant for us for this halacha is for the halacha of Kones Mashke, and Motzi Mashke is only the specific kula, only with the shard, as we mentioned, the difference. And where it says, my time, what's the reason? Why are we assuming that a shard is going to be different and remove its status and have a smaller shear, and we're more machmer in a shard than we would have a regular klei cheres, a regular earthenware vessel? So the Gemara says, I'm Ramar Zutra, brother of Nachman, Lefisha in Omrim Have, Gistra le Gistra, because people don't use, they don't say, bring a shard for this shard. What does that mean? It means that people don't use them, that if you have a shard that's broken, people will put another shard, we'll use a gistra to still complete, still use your klei cheres, so you still use your earthenware vessel. However, the shard as it is barely functional. What are you using it for? So if it has it in the tiny smallest hole, then at that point you're already going to disregard it and you're going to throw it away. So at that point already it makes sense to assume it's going to lose its status. So even the smallest hole when it comes to the shard is going to assume that it would lose its status. So if it was tabi beforehand, even the smaller shear we would assume would then render it tahar because it's barely usable as it is, as opposed to a regular kecheres, a regular earthenware vessel, if you have a small hole in it that's dripping, so you'll put something else under it. You'll put another gistri, you'll put another shard of something else to collect the water, but you'll still continue to use it because it is still a fully functional kli. It's more expensive, it's regular, and etc., etc. So now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, Amar Ula. Ula said, Pligi batre morai b'mar rava, the two Amarim, whenever it says marava, rest is referring to Eretz Yisrael. They disagree with regards to the size of the hole that's going to make it susceptible to tumah. When it comes to machshirei, what we said before, that how big, again, that when it comes to something that's attached to the ground, we assume that it's no longer going to have the status of something that can become tameh yet. It's only going to become tameh later on when it's not attached to the ground. If it's detached from the ground, at that point, from then point on, if it hits the seven mashkim, then it would then be susceptible to tumah. So the machlokas we had was when it comes to a pot that has a hole in it, there's going to be machlokas of how big does that pot need to be to now say that it's going to be considered attached to the ground? The Gemara says, "Rabbi Yosi Barav and Rabbi Yosef Da'ah, Chadamar Kimotzi Rimon." One says that the hole has to be big enough to have a pomegranate-sized hole. At that point, then that pot would then be considered connected to the ground. In which case, the contents inside would not become baltuba, and at that point, because it's connected to the ground. Chadamar Kishorish Katan, and one said that the shear has to be that of a small root, that the size of the small root. This Rashi points out. This was given by Rava before, that this pot was going to be the shear for Hechsher Tumah. So Ula is teaching us that this isn't so pasha. There's actually Machlokes Samurai about this whether or not we're going to assume that it's going to be Motzi Rimon or Shorish Katan. Shorish Katan is what we saw in the name of Rava on yesterday's daf, and on yesterday's daf. But here we're giving another shear of the shear of a Rimon of the pomegranate, the Simanayach. And how do you remember this? Is because we have the famous concept of Echad Amar Bevechad Amamet. This context was meant in reference to giving an Ola, right? There's three different levels of bringing an Ola. There's the rich person he'll bring an animal, and then we have the lower level is going to bring a bird. He's going to bring even after that, he's going to bring a mincha. He's only going to bring flour. So it says reich lichoach. It says a pleasant before Hashem. And we learn from there that echad amarba vechad amamin ilvavat sheichab and livavamar l'shamayim. That if a person is very poor and he gives everything that he's got, Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem will accept that as if it's like the rich person, and he'll accept that. So why is that remembrance over here? Because just like over there, there was three different levels. There was the three different levels: the richest, the poor, the middle, and the poorest. Right? When you have the korban behem, it's going to be a behem, an animal, and then the bird, and then the flower. So to over here, there's three different shurim. Rashi points out the three different shurim we're going to have is that of a shorish katan, the small root, or a kezias, which is a hole the size of an olive, or of a rimon. And they're arguing on the two different extremes. We have, meaning the kezias is the middle shear, but we have shorish katan which is the smallest shear, and then rimon, which is the largest shear, and that's the machlokas over here. We disregard the middle one, and to just remember that shita where there's three different things. We mentioned that there's also three different shears over here to choose from, and we pick only three. And I should just point out, why didn't we mention the two things of konis mashke or konis mashke or motzi mashke? Because those aren't relevant at all. No one would have a havamina that would be potentially helpful for with regards to machshirei kelim, to be machshirei zrayim, rather to start susceptible to tumah, because no one's going to assume it's attached to the ground. Only for other halachas would it be relevant with regards to the hole in the earthenware vessel. Now the Gemara continues, Amar b'chanan b'rakana, mashmei d'Rabbi Eliezer, klei cheres, when it comes to an earthenware vessel, shira kemot zesim, the measure we mentioned before to become tamar in a general standard, klei cheres, is going to be if you have enough to let olive through. Amar k'shisha b'eder mesayim, mashmei d'Rabbi Eliezer, he continued the statement of Rabbi Eliezer, v'arayan ke klei gilalim, klei avanim, klei adama, the earthenware utensil, which has an olive size hole, is going to be the same as a utensil made of dung or stone utensils or clay utensils, she'in mekabin tumah, which are not susceptible to tumah, lo midivrei Torah, v'lo midivrei sofrim. That we learned from over there, that earthenware utensils and olive holes are no longer going to be susceptible to tumah. This is going to be, even if the Rashi points out over here, even if they were designated for pomegranates. So this, we just point out, is against Rava before, because he said if you plan on using it for pomegranates and it was designated for that, then it would still be relevant for you to still be susceptible to tumah. So over here, the Gemara was telling him that would not be the case. So in Tzamid Patil, that with regards to covering, if you have the covering, remember, if an earthenware vessel it's covered, it's sealed off, then the Torah is mechadish that anything, the content inside of that klei cheres, the earthenware vessel, will no longer be tumah. So the Gemara is telling us over here, ad she yipaches rubo, until the majority of the utensil has been broken off, which is the exact thing that we just mentioned in the name of Rava on yesterday's daf. Would be the same thing, as long as if the utensil had not been more than or majority broken off, then at that point it would still save the contents inside. It's still halachically could be viewed as a kli for the purpose of saving the contents inside and still be called the kli cheres. With that, we finish Hajjan Lach HaMatzniach, Hajjan Lach HaMatzniach, Hajjan Lach HaMatzniach. Now we're up to Hazorek. So just to give an introduction quickly for Hazorek that we have over here, we mentioned, we already discussed already at the beginning of the first parak and the other inyanim about carrying on Shabbos. So this parak is going to discuss more about carrying, but a different type of carrying. It's going to be Zorek about throwing, and Moshit is just passing over. So it's passing it from one to another. So it's going to be different than that of carrying, because Zorek is only done by one person. And Moshit is also Chiddush, because it's all above. It's going to be only in the airspace and not going to be, and there's no Hanacha putting it down. So with that, you're going to have different halachas in this parak. It's going to be a little bit different. We're going to analyze different halachas that come out based on the differences between regular. Again, there is no Akira Hanacha in the normal sense that we have with regards to regular carrying in the Rishus HaRabim, or carrying from Rishus Yachad to Rishus HaRabim. So therefore, the dinim are going to be a little bit different. And with that, we're ready to start to pick up the parak of Hazorek. Hazorek, Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaRabim. Someone throws from a private domain to a public domain on Shabbos, Rishus HaRabim, Rishus HaYachid, or from a public domain to a private domain, Chayav, he is going to be liable, meaning that he has violated the Dinda Raisa of carrying, meaning the av is going to be carrying, the main one is going to be carrying, the subject, the tolda, the come out of there is going to be the tolda of this, of carrying, is going to be zrika of throwing, because you do have an akira nanacha from one domain to the other. Now the Mishnah continues, the Mishnah says, Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaYachid, so what if you threw something from a private domain to a private domain, Rishus HaRab Memtza, however, there's a public domain in between, Rabbi Kiv Mechayev, Vechachabim Pochim, the Mimachokas, Rabbi Kiv Mechachamim, the Gemara is going to analyze this on tomorrow's daf and Tzadik Zayin. What exactly are they arguing about? And the Gemara continues, Ketzad. So how is it? So Rashi points out that this is Lafi, the Shita of the Chachamim. Now we're continuing with Shita's Chachamim. Shtei gustros zokenegazo versus Ram. If you have two balconies, like what we have nowadays, the way people have balconies in apartment buildings, so that would be the way they had it also. These balconies were across beams that came out of the wall of their buildings, wherever they lived, that were opposite each other in the inner Rishus HaRabim. And Rashi points out that they each had the shear of the minimum of Rishus HaYachid. The shear for Rishus HaYachid is going to be 10 tfachim from the ground and 4 tfachim long. You have the minimum shear of Rishus HaYachid, so these are each considered a Rishus HaYachid. And now they're on opposite sides of the streets. Hamoshid Vazorek Mizul Azul Patar. If someone passes or throws an object from each one of them, from one to the other, he is going to be Pater, is going to be exempt. Okay. However, Hayushtan Bityosa Achas, if both balconies were on the same side of the Rishus HaRabim, so they came out on the same side, then it's going to depend. Hamoshit Chayav Azorik Pater. Someone who passes over in that example would be Chayav, Ivaida the Dinta Raisa. And however, someone who's throwing in that example would be Pater, would be exempt, because we're going to see that there's a difference. That's because that's how they did it in the Mishkan. And the Mishnah now elaborates. Why? This is how the Levim were loading. And then when it came to the Mishkan, again, they had to take it on and take it off. So this was done by Mishpachas Merar. We just learned about it in Parshas B'Midrash, actually came up, right? That the Bekas of Yisau, we just learned that they carry this. So the way that they did that, the two wagons were each one beyond each other, meaning that the way that they traveled is that they used to have, they would have to dismantle the whole Mishkan, and then they would put them on four different wagons, they would line them up in the Mishkan in two pairs, one behind another, and that was the way that they would travel. So they would have one behind another, so then Moshe did not crush them, so Lezo, what would they do? They would hand over in the Mishkan the boards from this wagon to the other wagon. So why didn't they throw them? So Rashi just points out they didn't throw them because they were very heavy. The Yerushalmi actually mentions that they didn't throw them, actually finish off the Mitzvah first, Aval Zot Lo Zorkin, they wouldn't throw the boards. So Rashi again mentioned because they were very heavy to throw, they were extremely heavy. However, the Yerushalmi writes actually an interesting pshat, which is a zilzul, not necessarily anything to do with the fact that it was too heavy, but that it was not proper to carry in that manner. So we see over here that there's actually machlokas. The Yerushalmi explains that when it comes to the violation of Moshit, that the Yerushalmi explains that why would over here you have two people? I'm passing from Reuven to Shimon. Why are they both going to be chayav? So they explain maybe it was the example of Zay Eino Yochel v'Zay Eino Yochel. Maybe that's the example why you're going to be chayav. Okay, that was interesting. But the other question we could ask is why does the Mishnah distinguish between passing along the length of the Rishus HaRabim, which we say you're going to be chayav, and then you're passing across, which we assume that you're going to be pater. Once you're passing over, that was done in the Mishkan. What difference does it make in which direction I'm passing over? So the Miri gives an interesting answer. He explains that there's a chiddush. The whole idea of Moshit is a very big chiddush. It's a very big chiddush because at the end of the day, it's something that is in airspace anyway. You've never really brought it down. So the fact they're going to be chayav anyway, we're never going to extend it past exactly what they did in the Mishkan, the exact way that they did in the Mishkan, because that was the way that they did it. So only that situation would want to be chayav. However, if you do it any other manner, you would not be chayav. And that's what the Mishnah's Gufa coming to teach you, that the way that they handed it over and the way they passed it over in the Mishkan is the way which one would be chayav. Okay, now the Gemara now is analyzing the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Michti Hazrika told the Dautzahi. So we see that throwing is like we mentioned before, is going to be a subcategory of the main malacha of taking out of taking from a Rishus HaYachid to Rishus Rabim. So the Gemara says, where do we see anywhere in the Torah that it tells you that it's usher to take out on Shabbos? So Tosa just point out, what do you mean, where do you see anywhere? We never learned that it needs to be explicitly written. The Torah, the Gemara told us earlier, based on the Mishnah, that anything that was done in the Mishkan is going to be Aser Midoraisa. That's where we learn the 39 Malachas. Doesn't none of them, except for actually H, which actually is a Shaila, if it's Bechlal, going to be Chiyav Misa, is actually written explicitly in any of the Torah. So Tosas gives an interesting answer. Tosas says that, no, if I didn't write the Iser explicitly of Otsah that we're going to try to find the Pasuk for, then I would have actually thought that it's not going to be an Av Malacha, because it's a Malacha Grua, because it's an inferior Malacha, right, that we mentioned before. I heard the name of Rav Shech when we first began the Masechta, that why is Hotzah an inferior malacha? Why is it a malacha guru as opposed to any other malacha? Because you haven't accomplished any change. If you look at, if you analyze the other 38 malachas, Bishol, I've created a new thing. Every time I've created something new, I've created a fundamental change. Hotzah, I'm just taking from place A to place B. I've done nothing to the object, nothing to myself. Nothing really changes by moving it. So therefore, I would have thought it's not a real malacha. So therefore, the Torah has to ask, the Gemara has to ask, where's the source Midor Reis? Interesting. So the Gemara says, Amar Bi Yochanan, Diamar Kra, Vayitzav Moshe Vayira Kol Menachem. The pasuk says that Moshe said that they made a proclamation. They made a proclamation. They said not to bring anything else to the Mishkan because they had enough donations. And the Gemara now says Moshe Heichan Havet Yosef Machane Leviyah. Where do we know Moshe was? We know Moshe was in Machane Leviyah. He was in the camp of Shevet Levi. Was over there. And now, so there, that's where they must have been bringing the donations. And then the Gemara continues and says, "Machane Leviyah, Rosh Hashanah." But we know that that Machane Leviyah was a public domain. And there's a very important, more important Rashi. Rashi says, "Machane Leviyah, Rosh Hashanah, Meishahayu Akol Mitzuyin Eitzel Moshe Rabbeinu." That everyone was by Moshe Rabbeinu. Why is there a hakol? All 600,000 people are Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what it implies from Rashi. So the Achronor Medayik, that this Rashi tells us, implies that you need 600. This is the source for Rashi, because there's no real, the Gemara isn't so clear in any place explicitly. There's Magid Machlokas as Rishonim about this. The Magid Mishnah is not happy. The Magid Mishnah quotes all the Rishonim, the Ritva, and the Ramban, and the Rashba, and the Rambam, who all hold that you don't need 600,000 people to make a Rosh Hashanah Doraisa. I'm not getting too much with it, more of Erev and Shaila, but the Maisa, that's a very big Nafkamina, because you can't make an Erev anywhere if you hold that there's a Rosh Hashanah Doraisa. If you hold that you need 600,000 people, then it's a lot easier to get around it, because you assume all the carrying, besides from Manhattan, Brooklyn, things like that, would be Rosh Hashanah, would only be carrying on a Darabatan level. But if you assume that you need, if you have 600,000, you need the Kli of 600,000 people, so Rashi seems to be Meduyak seems to imply that you actually need the 600,000 people from that point, and that's the Maharsham I saw also explains like that, that this Rashi this way. And he explains that that's Gufa, you need 600,000 people based on this Gemara over here. So the Gemara continues, Kamar Lili Yisrael, he told Klal Yisrael lo tafiku v'taisum Rosh Hashanah d'tchil Rosh Hashanah. He said, don't bring any materials from your tents, from your private domains, to the public domain, to the where I am right now. So the Gemara says, "Am I the Shabbos guy? But how do I know that this happened on Shabbos?" So the Gemara says, the Gemara answers, because Dilma, said the Gemara continues, Dilma b'cholka, maybe it was really during the week, Mishum d'shlima le'melacha, k'tziv k'tziv malachla k'ayisadam, so on the kasha, the Gemara is saying that at the end of the day, it says that it was enough, they had a sufficient amount of everything they needed, the building materials for the Mishkan, and everything was enough. So then maybe that's why they said the shofar is saying that we don't bring anymore. Who's telling that this happened on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, now we, Gemar havara miyom kippur, and we have exera shava between the words havara, of sounding the shofar on Yom Kippur and sounding the shofar here in this context. Ksiv hachav evra kol machna bayas, it says sounding the shofar, right? They said not to bring anything. Ksiv hasam bavarta kol shofar truah. The pasuk says by Yom Kippur, you'll sound the shofar. I'm pretty sure that's talking about Yom Kippur on the post Yovel year only, right? That's where I think it's talking about the shofar year. Mal alam b'yom asur. So just to know, Yom Kippur, it's asur, because we know that Yom Kippur has the same halacha as the Shabbos. So do afkan b'yom asur soti over here, where the pasuk is telling us that it's going to be asur on Shabbos to take it out. So now we see over here that clearly the Torah is telling that the Gzera Shava, that it was usher to take it out on Shabbos. The Sam Sofer just asks, what's the shaykhus between the fact that the Malacha had enough once they had enough of the things for the Mishkan, enough materials, then they mermavir the shofar to say there's Israel itself. Why didn't before they had enough materials they should already sound the shofar that it's enough? A very good kasha of Sam Sofer, right? So he says, very interesting, he's an interesting pshatel over here, but he gives a good pshat. He says, the Midrash tells us that they use the leftover funds to build a base medrash and to learn Torah with that funds. And he says, he quotes the Gemara Megillah, which says, Gadol Tamar Torah Yosef Rebbeinu Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara over there is a Gadol, but the Gemara says, so they thought maybe, we know that the Mishkan you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So they thought maybe, now we're using these extra funds to build, like the medrash tells us, to build the base medrash. Maybe we would have thought that is Docha Shabbos. And then, Dveiver Kosher V'machana, they had to tell you, no, by the way, it's still Aser to Mechala Shabbos. See, how important it was to build a base medrash, according to Sam Sefer. Again, it might be more of a pshetel, but a very nice pshat. Nonetheless, the Gemara continues. Eshkachan Otsa. So we see that taking out, meaning they brought in from their Shus Hayachid to their Shus Rabim. However, Hachnasa, where do we see that they could bring, that there's an Isser to bring from their Shus Rabim, from the public domain to the private domain? Where do we see that there would be a source for that? And where says Sparahi, it's just a logical argument. Michti, Rishus, Rishus, Kuhu. Mali, Afuki, Mali, Ayule. So at the end of the day, we're going, the Torah is makbid about taking from one domain to another. So what's the difference if I'm taking it out from the Shus Hayachid to Shus Rabim, or vice versa, I'm bringing it in from the Shus Rabim into the Shus Hayachid? Miu Hotsa, Avachnasa, told about at the end of the day that since the pasuk was talking explicitly by taking out from their shus hayachid, that's going to be considered the av, and then that's going to be the primary one, and then the subcategory is going to be that of bringing in from their shus harabim, from the public domain to their shus hayachid, is only going to be considered a subcategory. So now, so the Gemara says a michti. But at the end of the day, what's the difference? We know that you're chayav and you're chayav misa on both an av on the main category and also on the primary category and also on the subcategory on the tolda. So what's the difference in my kar le av and my kar le tolda? Why does one of them call the primary the main one and the other one is called the subcategory? What's the difference at the end of the day? So the Gemara says nafkamina, there actually is a difference between the avich de avos behade adade, that if a person does with one action not realizing Shabbos, let's say, so then he does two different avos malachos, then he would be chayav. For example, let's say he did bishul and he cooked on Shabbos, and then he also did hotzah, and then he carried something. So if he does those two, those would be chayav two different korban chataces, if you did it by accident. Inam ishte toldos ba'da'adadeh, or you did two different toldoses of different avos malachos. Let's say kibbutz, right? Kibbutz is a tolda of melabin. Laundering. So you wash your garment in water. That's an issur d'oraisa. That's a tolda of melabin. And at the same time, also you squeezed out grapes, which is a tolda of dash. Right. So if you did those two, you could mechayev tarti. You would still be chayev two different chatas for each category that you violated. The avid av tolda d'day. Whereas if you did an av and a tolda, then la mechayev al chad, you only mechayev one. So let's say we're using melabin. So melabin. So the actual malacha of melabin was whitening the wool. Right. Melabin semer, whitening the wool. That was the av malacha. So if a person actually whitens wool on Shabbos, and then he also launders his garment, he washes his garment in water and cleans it up with soap, then you would only bechayav one chatas, because you technically did one av and one tolda. It was only under one category of Isser Dereisa, and therefore, even though there's two separate Isserim, but since it was under one category, you only chayav one chatas. And we're asked, so the Rabbi Eliezer, to mechayav a tolda b'makum av, my karle av and my karle told it. But according to Rabbi Lezer, who in Rashi points out in the Masechas Krisus, learns out that a person is in fact in that example that we gave of whitening the tzemer and laundering, you'd be chayav actually taka two different chatoses according to Rabbi Lezer. So what's the difference then according to him? So the Gemara says, Hachta have b'mishkan chashiva karle av. The fact that it was performed in the Mishkan, that is going to give it significance. Hachta lava mishkan chashiva lo karle av. However, an act which is not significant in the Mishkan, that is not considered an avde. Rather, it's going to be only a subcategory. It's going to be a tolda. So the Gemara is answering really according to the way we the most Rishonim understand it over here, is that Rabbi Lezer is just is agreeing that at the end of the day that there is no real difference between an avde. There's no halachic difference between an av and a tolda. Just simply what is considered av, and it's just for namesake what's considered a primary and not, just how to categorize it better. But there is no halachic nafkamina. Tosos over here in Bava Kama, this famous Gemara comes up in Bava Kama as well. They give another possibility with vichashiva, that if it was done in the Mishkan, and it was chashiv as well in the Mishkan itself, that's going to be considered av, and then there would be other things that would not be a av based on that, like Mashke's Ram, they give the example in the Tosos over here. So that would be another difference if you have the gears of Mishkan v'chashiv, and it also had to be chashiv, that you need two both things to make it an av. So hach t'siva kare av, what is written in the Torah is considered primary, v'hai delok siva kare tolda, while that which is not written in the Torah is going to be considered only a derivative of that. Now the Gemara asks, how do we learn in the Mishnah, Hazorik arba amos bakotel, someone throws an object for amos in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, in the public domain, against the wall, and Rashi points out, but based on the Gemara later, we're going to see that he threw something sticky, and it figs, and then it went to the wall. So then, lamalama starts fachim, if it went from 10 fachim out above the wall, kizorik ba'avir, it's like he threw it in the air. And Rashi points out, because you're patur, because it never went, it never had it never was nach on Rosh Hashanah, it never stopped in the Rosh Hashanah, because lamala asara, it's not, and it's not considered as if you threw, because you were in the Rosh Hashanah, it sounds as if you threw from the Rosh Hashanah, there's a yachid. Because it's not a place that has rachav of dalit, so therefore it's not considered. It's therefore the makom tor. Lamata masar tefachim. However, if you throw it on the wall and the wall is below 10 tefachim on the area where you threw it, kizorik paaretz, then it's going to be as if you threw it on the ground. In which case, whatever comes to rest within the rishus harabim of that 10 tefachim is going to be considered like it's the rishus harabim, and you are going to avir rishus harabim uvechayev. Okay, so that's what Rashi says. Vehazorik paaretz arba amos chayev, and someone who throws an object that's going to land on the ground 4 amos away from the Rosh Hashanah is going to be chayav. So now the Gemara continues. Gemara says, Zarek arba amos Rosh Hashanah menalim dechayav. So the Gemara brings this as an introduction. How do we know that someone throws an object 4 amos in the Rosh Hashanah is going to be chayav? So the Gemara says, where do we learn this out from? Where's the Amar Rabbi Yoshia? Shekin orge yiriyah zorkin machtein zelazeh. How do I know this? Because people who are weaving, if they were weaving the curtains of the Mishkan, they would throw their needles to one another. So in the construction of the Mishkan, so they would do this in the construction of the Mishkan. But Pashas happened in the Rishus of Rabbim, Rishonim point out, and therefore they must have been throwing it when they needed it, and they needed to borrow it from one another. They would give it to one another and they would throw it. So the Gemara says, "Organ Machtin Lamalu." So why do weavers need needles? Weavers are using a loom for the work. They don't use needles. So the Gemara says, "Ela Shekin Tofrei Yerios Zorkin Machtin Zelazet." That the Gemara is saying that really, right, that throwing dalamas is really from the fact that people who are sewing the curtains, they would throw the people who sew obviously need needles, and they would throw it from back and forth to one of them, to each other. So the Gemara says, Dilma gabe hadadi aviyasu, but maybe who said that they were sitting four amas away from other? Maybe the Rashi says that it would be only violating the halacha of moshit. You would only be passing it from one to another. They weren't doing the violation of throwing it because they were sitting closer together, just giving it to one another. They weren't, if they were less than four amos away. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, Matu adade b'machtin. That really, maybe you could assume that they would not sit near each other because if they did, the Rashi points out, then they would hit each other. They would reach the prick and one another. They would pick each other with the needles, and then when they would draw back and say in the titches, they would hit each other. So therefore, they didn't sit too close to each other. Yes, granted, they didn't sit a foot away from each other. Maybe they sat 2 feet away from each other, 3 feet away, which is less than four amos. So the Gemara says, Elam Rav Chista Shekin Orgerios Zorkin Bechuar Biyaria. So the Gemara says that really, that the throwing for amos is basically on the fact that the people who are weaving the curtains used to throw the shuttle across the width of the curtain. That in the times of the Gemara, apparently the shuttle was used in the time of the Gemara, it was a small type of reed to which someone tied a thread of the woof and passed it, or threw it between the threads of the warp. So the Gemara also has an example of things that were constructed with a type of tube or a small ball that would throw the woof inside of it. Either way, this is what they were doing, and therefore they would throw it back and forth. The Gemara says, Valo Ogdo Biyado, but if he would still, when they would throw it back and forth, the shuttle never left his hand. And we know that Rashi says that if it's something that doesn't leave your hand, firstly before then, he says that if you're still holding the weft thread at the end of while you're holding it, if someone is still holding something, then it's not considered, we're going to see based on later on, that even if I throw something for amos, but I still have the other end of it, that is not going to make me chayav. So the Gemara answers, the Gemara says, Beniska Basra. We're talking about a case where we threw the last piece of the weft thread, and therefore it actually did unwind and did completely leave your grasp, and you didn't have it. And since you didn't have it, you would be chayav on Zrika and Rishus Rav. So the Gemara says, oh, veha b'makam p'tur ka'azla, but doesn't the shuttle go in an area that's a makam p'tur, an exempt area? Why? Because the curtains were less than four handbreadths wide, and if it was less than four tefachim, therefore it would be a makam p'tur, even though, it would be considered a makam p'tur. So the Gemara says, so ela shekin orgeria zorkin b'chior l'sholem. Rather, it must be because the weavers would, of these curtains, they would just throw the shuttle to those who wanted to borrow it from them. The Gemara asks, is that really true? But maybe they were sitting next to each other. Why are you assuming that they were far away from each other? So the Gemara says, Mate adade bechefes. That's impossible because they would reach one another and they would disturb one another from the thread at the end of the curtain. So therefore they were, we don't assume that they were together. Gemara says, but Dilma shalufei havu mishalfei. But maybe the weavers sat lined up, Rashi says, right? The Rashi says that each weaver was right in slightly in front of the other one. So therefore, that's how they lined up, and therefore they were not necessarily dalamas. Gemara says, Vesu. And then we're going to have a list of questions to reject this. Gemara says, Vesu. Mishal me'adadi, the weavers really bothered to choose from Luda. We learn in the Braisa, ish malafto asherima osim. The pasuk says that each person who was doing his work from that he was doing malachtu osav enosav malachas chaveru. He was doing his own work, but he wasn't doing his friend's work. Meaning, Rashi says that they didn't need to borrow. They had their enough tools for themselves. They needed to borrow some tools from their friends. So therefore, they were using. So if they didn't need to borrow tools, then obviously they weren't throwing it from one to another. Verses two and further. Ma'avir arabas versus Rabbi Menalim b'chayev. How do we know that someone who carries four amos neshama is chayev? So meaning that this would only be telling the zrika. This wouldn't be telling you about carrying, about being ma'avir. Someone who's carrying, how do I know that he's going to be chayav? So Gemara says, Ela kol arba amos b'rishus rabim gemar gemiri Allah. It must be the halacha l'moshe m'sinai that a person who carries four amos and the rishus rabim is chayav. That's the halacha l'moshe m'sinai. We don't learn it out necessarily from the explicit malachas that were done in the Mishnah, in the Mishkan. So now the Gemara discussing which malachas done. The Gemara is going to go on a little bit of attention. Gemara says, Amar Avudah Mar Shmuel Mekoshes Ma'avi arba amos b'rishus amhava. That the Mekoshes Eitzim, he was gathering He's gathering the wood. It doesn't say clearly, but this week's parsha for those who live in Eretz Yisrael. It's parsha Shlach. So the pasuk says that he gathered wood on Shabbos, the mekosha ate him on Shabbos, and then it doesn't say what malacha he did. So Shmuel was telling you that he did the malacha of mavir of carrying in the Rishus HaRabim. Where says Rasi Zakata the Brisa Tolish Havet that he was doing the malacha of Tolish, which would be under the malacha of Kotzer of reaping. That is the malacha that he did. And the Gemara says Ravacha Rabbi Yaakov Omer Ma'amer Havet that he was gathering. He was doing the gathering. He was gathering the scattered wood, which is the malacha of Ma'amer of gathering together. That is going to be the malacha that he did. So the Gemara says L'may Nafkamin. What's the difference? What malacha he did? It was Chayav Misa. Whatever he did, it violated one of the malachas of Shabbos. The Gemara says L'chadarav Damar Rav. We saw this Gemara already before. We saw that a hidden scroll in the name of Reb Chiya. Why was it hidden? Because they used to not write down Torah Shebaal Peh. It was usher before the time was written to Torah Shebaal Peh. So if someone had a chiddush they didn't want to forget, they used to hide it because they didn't want anyone to see it, to not to violate this halacha of Torah Shebaal Peh being written down. So Rav had access to this by Reb Chiya because he was related. So he had his kasubay and it said over there, Yisi ben Yehuda Omer, Yisi holds, Avos malachos Abram Chas Rachas, Ve'enochai Velachas. The malachos on Shabbos are 39 and you're only going to be chayav one. So the Gemara asks though, says achas is too low. You can tell me only chayav one chatas and not more than one chatas. But none. Don't we learn in the Mishnah avos malachos abrayim chaser alchas? You're going to be chayav 39. Ve'avina, but we say, well, in another one, I know how to count that Mishnah over there. Why do you have to tell me that it's 39? The Gemara says, Ram Rabbi Yochanan she'im asim kulam elam achad chayav al kol achas achas. No, the goof of the Mishnah is telling you that you need 30 to tell you 39 because on each one you're going to be chayav an independent chatas if you do it by accident. So the Gemara is saying, how then if that's a kasha, then how can EC say that you're going to be chayav one chatas doing all of them? So Gemara says, "Ela, ema, eno, ela, chayav, eno, 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 em, ema, eno, chayav, ela, achas, mehem." That there's one of them that if you do it, you are going. There's not going to be an issur deraisa of skila. You're not going to be chayav deraisa of getting the death penalty. So Gemara says, "Rav Yehuda pshitalei the maver chayav." So Rav Yehuda, by telling you that it's going to be maver, so then he's telling you that Rav Yehuda is telling you that it's going to be that's clearly going to be chayav misa because the Torah is telling you it's chayav misa. So obviously they can't be the one that Isi was talking about. Masnisha bashar to tell us tolish chayav, and also the tana of the breisa he may be telling you that also tolish that the malach of kotzer can't be the one because that one held that kotzer was chayav misa. Rav Yehuda pshitalei the maver chayav, and Rav Yehuda must be telling you the one who's gathering. Is also going to have the death penalty, and Mar Savar Mia Lo Masafke. So we're saying that okay, Mar Savar Mia Lo Masafke. I mean, each one is telling you that. By the way, this is not the one that Isi Ben Yehuda was telling us because you were Chayav Misa for that. Okay, Mr. Shem, pick up with the words Tanur Rabbanan Mekoshes Safkad. Continuing the story, Mr. Shem, tomorrow.